Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's the best stuff happening in food and tech? We'll find out in this episode and Tasting Table. Hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners. It is 1 p.m. on Monday afternoon. I'm in the backyard of Roberta's. It's actually a sunny day now and warm and beautiful. And we're excited because it's time for Tech Bites, the weekly radio show on the Heritage Radio Network where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today that technology is kind of the best of all the food technology that has been showcased on the Tasting Table this month. We have with us in studio today, editorial director Karen Palmer.
Thank you for having me.
We're excited to talk to you. You have
Thanks.
Lots of good stuff happening on Tasting Table this month. Making our conversation into an actual broadcast podcast, we have the gentleman in the booth, Jack Inslee, our executive producer of the radio network, DJ, live DJ sometimes, on-the-air DJ every Thursday night for full-service radio, followed by Gunwash. And he is about to head down to Charleston tomorrow, yeah?
That's right, yeah. I'm excited.
What are you doing down there?
We are actually having a pop-up studio at Charleston Wine and Food. So we're doing 3 days of live programming, podcasts, drinking competitions, all kinds of fun stuff. It's going to be like all-day broadcasts. You'll be able to listen live, which is fun. We'll have a whole remote live setup and just enjoying Charleston.
So what are the dates of the festival?
That is a great question. The first event is Wednesday night, so I believe that's the second. And then we will be set up on the 4th and 5th in their Culinary Village, live streaming shows all day.
That's exciting. So if you are in Charleston, stop by. I believe they built you guys a teepee.
Something like that, yeah.
Stop by the Heritage Radio Network teepee to get in on the broadcasting. And if you can't make it, like myself, I'll be trapped in New York City, listen live at heritageradio.org.
Yeah.
Should be a good time.
Totally.
So also back in the booth, we have our still pretty fresh, new studio manager, engineer of the show, David, and I will not say your last name because it's extremely challenging.
Tadashore.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Can we do a nickname, Jack?
Why does he get the say in that?
Well, because I need crowd support and grassroots to make a nickname happen, because
true.
If people just start calling you by the nickname, then it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably not going to call yourself by the nickname.
No, that would be weird.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I want the nickname to get support, I need it to go viral.
Right.
I don't know. Right now, the first thing that popped into mind is Mr. T, but we'll see. Jack's nodding his head vigorously.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe. That might work. Okay. The first thing we do after we intro everybody on the show is we start off, like a good meal, with an app. We all talk about favorite apps that we like, new discoveries, old favorites. The only rule is that you're not allowed to talk about an app that you work on or that is affiliated with your work.
Yeah.
So we'll give you a little bit of time to think about that one, and we'll go to Mr. T.
Oh, I thought I was going to get time to work on that one. I guess one that I have used recently, and I don't use frequently, but it's called Text Later, and I'm sure there are other varieties of this type of app where you can just schedule a text message. So like when something occurs to me at 3 a.m. and I don't want the person I'm sending to think I'm some kind of mutant, I can schedule it for, you know, 9 or 10 a.m.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You can also set that up as reminders to people.
Yeah.
Text later?
Text later. And yeah, I'm sure there are a million apps that are similar, but that's the one I have.
And it's free?
Yes.
And it's for iPhone?
Android is.
Android. Right, yeah. Okay.
Possibly
good to
also
know.
For iPhone.
All right. So Mr. T's an Android guy.
Indeed.
Got it.
Always have been.
Building the database. Building the database. Jack, before you go to your app, your new app for this week, we're going to ask you how your 30-day workout app is going.
My 30-day workout app is going well, and I also went to an actual gym for the first time this weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a membership to the Y now.
Jack.
I ran 4 miles.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's happening.
Like 4 miles inside on a treadmill or around a track, like not from
treadmill.
You owed money to?
Treadmill. Here's the life hack I found, right? Because as a DJ, you have to review a lot of music, you know, and you have to sort through a lot of bad music to kind of like find the good stuff. So I have these folders of like thousands and thousands of songs that I never get around to listening to. So, of course, just hit the treadmill, put it on my phone. I'm sitting there like making a DJ playlist while I work out.
Are you super conscientious of the beats per minute if you're listening to music while you're working out?
You know what? Yes, that happened. Like when quicker music came on, I was increasing the speed of the treadmill to kind of match that BPM. You're totally right. That happened.
So you may or may not be aware of this, but you know there's an entire cache of music and podcasts that is set to specific BPMs because that's the pace for running and working out.
Interesting.
So sometimes, you know, and it'll be a mix of a long mix of music for the amount of time that you want to work out. And mm-hmm. it'll be categoric like disco, techno, world beat, samba. But it'll tell you what the BPMs are so that you know what your pace is if you're running.
Interesting.
Yeah, you might want to check that out. Might be a whole new DJ arena for you to branch out into.
This is a whole new world. This is the first time I ever really set foot in a gym. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I survived.
Are you going to put it on pause when you go down to Charleston?
No, I hope there's a gym in the hotel. You know, we'll keep it going.
I'm going to get that text you later thing and set up all these texts for you like, did you work out, Jack? Did you work out yet? How about now?
Wow,
how about now?
Wow. Wow. You got it. Well, to finish up here with the app, I have a very mindless app today. It's called This Is Sand, and it is a virtual sand art app. So you know like the old sand art when you would pour sand into a little thing into layers of different colors and this is exactly what this is. I wasted about 30 minutes of my life on this over the weekend.
Wow.
But it's fun. It's a really fun app and the results are beautiful. So check it out. This is sand.
This is sand.
It's very relaxing.
Okay. Like virtual sand coloring? Coloring is
very popular
now.
Basically, yeah. You can even like point your camera at a color and then you hold down the screen and it pours sand at that color, if that makes sense.
The great thing is that Jack's doing it right now. He's like holding up his phone, pointing it at something, and you know. Oh, nice.
There you go.
Sound effects.
Yeah.
So, Karen, do you have an app that you use a lot that you love?
Well, I actually just downloaded something this weekend that a friend was telling me about, and it has nothing to do with food. It's actually called Zeel, Z-E-E-L, and it's kind of like an Uber for massage therapists. So, you can schedule somebody to come to your apartment. They can bring a table if you don't have one, because I don't know many people who have a massage table in their apartment.
Did you use it?
I haven't used it yet, but I've been just kind of like playing around with it. So you can choose like massage style, how long, male or female therapist, that kind of stuff. So it just seems like a fun.
So it's an out call.
Right.
Massage therapist comes to your home. Hotel room.
Wherever.
Place of work.
Exactly.
Wherever you want.
Exactly.
Interesting. The thing about that, I wonder who's vetting the massage therapists that are on the site.
Correct.
What the vetting process is, the screening process, the employment records,
Right. Yeah, that can be a little tricky. The friend that has been using it has had a great experience every time. Right. So
that would freak me out a little bit to have like
somebody come into your house.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. Some people are comfortable with that, calling a stranger to come into your house to provide an intimate service for you. It's kind of, I don't know.
I've been tempted. I have like this coupon that they keep sending me.
You've been tempted.
Yeah, I just haven't really pulled the trigger on it.
Okay. Well, report back if you do.
Yeah. I think I mentioned it in like episode 10 or something.
The outcall for the massage service?
Definitely.
No, you definitely did not.
Oh, maybe I thought about bringing it up.
No, I would have remembered massage outcall app for sure. Definitely.
Well, yeah. One of us will try it and we'll let you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, now that you're working out a lot, Jack, you're going to have a good reason to call because massage therapy is a great recovery tool when you're working out.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. Now we're talking. Okay. So, Tasting Table, digital media around food. Started off as an email service, is now a full-blown website. They also recently added an app called Dine. You decided, Karen, to devote the month of February to food and tech. So, I mean, obviously, here at Tech Bites, we think food and tech is a very, very rich, relevant subject. What made you think that you needed to dedicate a whole month to it versus just kind of regular coverage or creating a category for it?
Sure. Some of the thinking behind it was that, you know, not necessarily so much about gadgets and gizmos that people are using in the kitchen. I mean, we cover that on tastingtable.com pretty frequently. But just the ways that, like you talk about here on the podcast, technology is shaping the way that we eat, especially as diners and restaurants, how social media is impacting that. And it seemed like there was so much going on, you know, between Instagram and restaurant design or the way that restaurants can track their diners these days. It just seemed like we wanted to explore some of these topics in more depth and package it all together in one month as opposed to, like you said, kind of rolling it out over the year. Obviously, we do cover things like apps and podcasts and that kind of stuff throughout the year, but just kind of like taking a moment to really focus on it.
Were there any stories that were surprises to you?
Actually, the one that just came out today, which was around Instagram and restaurant design, we spoke to our senior editor, Deborah First, spoke to several people within the restaurant industry, a couple of designers, Patrick Janelle, who's basically, you know, a design guy, but also kind of a professional Instagrammer, Michael Cherno, who owns Seymour's on the Lower East Side and also co-owner of the Meatball Shop. Just about how Instagram is influencing design, and is it like a chicken and egg thing where, you know, they're both kind of working together? It was really interesting hearing what people's responses were to that.
Instagram has had really a prolific impact on life in general, but really profound, I think, on the restaurant industry as a whole. And sure. I don't even know if we're over the top yet.
Right.
For something that's only been around for 6 years, it launched in 2010. We did a show here last year. It's Tech Bites episode 14 called The Instagram Effect with Kate Crater, the restaurant editor at Food & Wine Magazine, and Stephen Hall, who owns a New York City PR firm, about what the impact of it has been just in terms of them doing their jobs. And the thing that's fascinating is that it allows a greater distribution of information,
right,
which is wonderful, but it also makes people think they can substitute real life knowledge with information. And there's really a difference between having an actual functional working knowledge of a dish, a restaurant, a drink, and then having kind of superficial top line information about it.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, in terms of the design, it's just, you know, one of the things that Michael mentioned was that for Seymour's, Instagram certainly played a role in, like, textures and tabletop and, you know, even how they designed the bathroom because they wanted it to, you know, be a place where people would take photos.
Because the bathroom selfie is a thing.
Exactly. And you go into, I mean, tons of restaurants. I was at a restaurant this weekend, one of my favorites, Vic's, and they have, you know, that bright pink flamingo wallpaper in the bathroom. And it's like, you know, we did not speak to Vic's for this story, but like, obviously that's something, if you look at their Instagram feed where they're tagged, that gets posted all the time. So it's like these small little details that people are picking out and making for an Instagrammable experience.
Do you think that Instagrammable equals good real life experience?
Not necessarily.
I mean, the characteristics that, and this today's story, if you subscribe to Tasting Table, and the story that posted today on the website is about the Instagram effect on restaurant design. But we can also carry that through to the Instagram effect on ingredients and plates and dishes and all those kinds of things. Do you think if restaurants are working to present a better image on Instagram, does that translate to a better environment in the restaurant?
Again, not necessarily. I think that, you know, there are so many dishes out there right now that you feel like were just created for Instagram. Does it mean that you want to eat it or it's good necessarily? No, but it's like a crazy milkshake that has 50 different things piled on top of it. Is that going to be your best dessert experience that you've ever had? Maybe, maybe not. So
I wonder how that applies. I wonder if you can draw the same parallel to the design, though. Because theoretically, if it's good for Instagram, that means it has good lighting. That means
True.
It's interesting.
True.
That means you can see.
True. But also, you know, I mean, every once in a while, you might want a cozy, kind of dimly lit meal as opposed to, you know, glaring lights kind of beating down on you and your food. I don't know. It kind of depends on what you're in the mood for and what you want.
Very interesting how much the restaurant industry is now taking into account the opportunity and the effects of all the social media across the board. Because, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, many of these things didn't exist.
Right.
And then the consumer behavior pattern to be on them all day long, all the time, didn't exist either. So it really is new, completely new territory. And something that we speak frequently about on this show is that there's a whole spectrum of jobs and responsibilities and experiences that restaurants need to consider,
right,
which didn't exist before. And legitimately, all of this tech-driven digital stuff kind of requires a specific tech-driven digital knowledge base,
right,
which, you know, a great manager or wait person doesn't necessarily have the skill set for.
Right.
But those are often the people who are being asked to sort of manage all these things by default.
Right. And I think it's interesting, too, that, you know, being in the industry and following these restaurants, you know, you can track a restaurant's opening on Instagram because they're already posting the interior or the dish and like all of this information that wasn't necessarily available for before they were kind of trying to keep under wraps. It's like they almost have to publicize it before the restaurant is even open.
One of the most fascinating stories, I do think, also I agree with you, the one that you mentioned at the top of the show is the one that was about how what the restaurant knows about you before you walk in.
Right.
So share what the details were of that, because
sure.
This is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so our editor-at-large, Kat Kinsman, wrote a feature about, you know, different ways that restaurants can track diners' behavior, whether it's data from Open Table or Resy. You know, they might be able to tell what kind of wine you typically like to order, or I believe on Resy you can even kind of, like, track the progress of a diner's meal so you know when to stop over and say hello. But the couple of hospitality professionals that she spoke to, including, you know, John Winterman, who's been in the business for a long time at Batard, and before that with Danielle, it's that kind of, you know, push-pull of, yes, you can track these certain behaviors and have data, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, that person is always going to order from that wine region, or, you know, that an app can give you data that's going to lead to them having a better experience. You know, you still have to go over and talk to them and take into account, you know, what kind of day the person is having. Like, it might say that a diner is difficult, but they might have just been having a bad day, that one day they came into the restaurant. So just kind of that balance of data versus the personal touch that hospitality professionals, you know, have to give to their diners to create a great experience.
So people, again, something we say quite a bit on the show, often don't realize how much personal information they have out there in the world on
right.
the internet. And every time Facebook changes its privacy settings or something like that, people get, you know, all up in arms and, you know, repost things about this is only for my use or my friends or these are the people who are going to see it. But every time you engage in something digital, whether it's on your phone or your computer or your right. tablet, the internet is recording it mm-hmm. somewhere. All of that information is being captured and recorded and saved somewhere. So in some instances, it's very specific, like the point of sale and reservation platforms like OpenTable and Resy, where logically you would think, okay, I'm putting this in here. It's sending me an email. I've built an account. It's tracking. People might not realize that because these reservation systems are also used in the restaurant for the point of sale, it's also recording what you ordered and what you
right.
drank and how long you were there and how much you spent and maybe how much you tipped and the table you sat in and any comments and all those kinds of things. So the activity that you engage in directly with the program online or on your phone and then what you engage in real life, that the restaurant then uses the technology to manage their sales
right.
all gets saved. I wonder if people are aware of sort of that extra step hospitality takes.
Right.
Because I think we understand that within the systems that we're using and that the restaurant's using, that it's capturing data. Talk a little bit about the steps that restaurants take outside of those systems to get to know their customers.
Well, I think, again, you know, it's...
And it's typically in the realm of fine dining because fast casual... People, restaurants don't really have the time or the bandwidth to spend that this much time.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the points that John Winterman makes is like actually getting to know the customers and again, just talking with them and trying to understand what their preferences are outside of this, you know, just, you know, customer A ordered the chicken tonight. Like, I don't think, you know, again, the next time they come in, they might be in the mood for something completely different. So it's just like creating that atmosphere.
I have a friend who recently went to one of the top fine dining restaurants in the city with a group to celebrate a couple of different things. And they were very pleasantly surprised that the restaurant had gone to the trouble of basically Googling everybody mm-hmm. and pulling down images of people from the internet of the moments they were celebrating. One person was promoted, one person had a birthday, you know, so
right.
they started Googling and looking through the internet for personal pieces of information about their guests to interject into the dining experience to say, hey, we know you're here to celebrate these things. We've found these things. We're going to, you know, sort of enhance your experience. And on the one hand, that's kind of amazing that they
right.
took that much time and were that thoughtful to do that. The flip side to that, for me, is that too much?
Right.
Is that kind of creepy, having your restaurant maitre d', server, you know, cyber stalk you to pull down birthday pictures of you from
right.
the internet to then print on your menu? I mean, I can see the amazingness of it, and to be perfectly transparent, the friend who recounted this story was completely enthralled and impressed and really enjoyed the experience, and it really enhanced the experience. So this sort of like,
and now
I
did
don't
she...
know, the shadow side is completely 100% my interjection.
Right. Now, did the friend, had she been there a bunch of times? Had he been there
yes.
a bunch of times before?
Yes.
Okay.
Had been there a bunch of times before, knows them, and is probably considered like a friend of the restaurant or a frequent customer and that kind of thing.
Right.
So,
see, that would make me a little less uncomfortable then because, you know, mm-hmm. you have a relationship with
right.
the staff already. But I think if it was my first time in, that would certainly be a bit much.
Where's the line? I think that's a fun question. And that's a fun question that we will talk about when we come back from the break after listening to some music and hearing a word from our amazing sponsor.
This is Field Trip World by RecTech.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's Distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. This stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.
Well, if you're wondering what the hell you just clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly radio show on the Heritage Radio Network where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. That is not cooking technology. That is not immersion circulators and calcium alginates. That's the Dave Arnold Show, Cooking Issues. The food tech we talk about here is digital web app tech, and today we are talking with Karen Palmer from Tasting Table about their month of February editorial, which was the best of food and tech. So one of the things that we were just discussing before the break was how restaurants, like regular people, use the internet and Google and social media to research their customers sometimes to give them a better eating experience. And there's a part of that that's really great, that they're attentive and they're curious and they want to know. And there's a part of that to me that's a little bit creepy. But I suppose Googling and doing research on people is just a part of the digital age we live in.
It's true. Scary, but true.
And I think we expect people to Google and search us if we're dating or applying for a job or in an interview or going to have a meeting with somebody or maybe checking out the 411 on your in-call massage therapist.
Exactly.
But when we go to restaurants, I think it's a little bit different. Or maybe am I just being...
I don't know. I guess you could also argue that if the restaurant is doing it to try to make your experience better, then that's a positive. But I agree with you where, you know, if it was my first time in a restaurant and they knew all this kind of personal information, I would be a little taken aback and, you know, it would feel a little bit intrusive considering, you know, I'm just going there to have a meal.
Did you get, and what kind of feedback did you get internally on the story? And then what kind of feedback did you get externally?
Internally, you know, everybody really, we try to, you know, every once in a while on tastingtable.com, we bring the kind of front of the house perspective into restaurants because I think, you know, a lot of publications are very focused on the chefs and the back of the house. So whenever we do one of these stories, I think it's interesting to hear that other perspective. So internally, everybody really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, again, it's that fine line of using technology, but still the hospitality professional still having to use a personal touch to make a dining experience special. I think this, the two people that we profiled really hit on that very well. Externally, we did hear from, you know, some hospitality professionals who also like enjoyed that we were hitting on this. You know, it's not like a super hot button topic, but just something to think about in terms of technology and how it can be used with restaurants moving forward.
What was it that people liked about it, the industry folks?
Just its honesty, because it's like, you know, yes, you have all this data that you've gotten from apps or different services that you subscribe to, but it doesn't mean that, you know, the numbers aren't everything. And having to, again, still kind of connect with your customers is something that's very important.
So the industry response was, yes, all that technology exists, but you still have to have a real life
exactly
touch.
Exactly.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. What was the biggest surprise in terms of response that you got in the terms of the stories that you covered? Was there anything that you didn't expect?
Not really. I mean, I'm trying to think.
You covered a lot of ground.
We did.
You know,
I mean, we
covered apps,
you know,
and technology and the
maitre
d's and
exactly.
Podcasting and professional Instagramming.
Exactly. We went in a little bit into, you know, even just things as simple as like how to use your iPhone better in the kitchen, whether you use it as a scale or for a timer or watching cooking.
Siri the sous chef is
exactly.
our favorite.
Exactly.
Here.
But yeah, I don't think we got any feedback that was, you know, super surprising or controversial necessarily.
Tasting Table's not a media outlet that is out for controversy, really. You're
right.
Really kind of at heart a service.
Correct.
Service media.
Exactly. We're not snarky. We cover things that we recommend and that we like. So, you know, it's a positive
spin. If you don't have
spin.
Anything nice to say, you
exactly.
don't say anything.
It's not going to be said on tastingtable.com.
There, you also did some stories about apps, and of course, you launched an app very recently called Dine.
We did.
I would be curious to know what essentially was the driver behind doing an app versus just doing like a really great mobile website, because
sure.
I'm not going to say it's exactly the same content, because on
right.
the app it is localized restaurant guides and suggestions, but it is a lot of it's the tasting table information
right
packaged in a guide
in an app.
App
right. Well, one of the reasons I can go into a little bit of history about Tasting Table, not too long.
We
but,
love history and context.
Awesome.
Because a lot of people don't have that. So this
correct.
Is a good place to get it.
Right.
We often
so,
do like retrospective episodes
cool.
here. So,
well, Tasting Table launched in 2008, as you mentioned, as an email publication because we wanted to build a community kind of in the Daily Candy style of doing that. But a couple of years later, shifted our focus to a national website. And what we found was that our readers wanted content that was, you know, relevant anywhere on the website, but they still wanted restaurant recommendations for their local cities. So last year, we acquired an app called Flavor and relaunched it in November as Dine by Tasting Table to still offer that restaurant recommendation service. So the app, I mean, it's in 9 cities now. We actually just launched Detroit a couple weeks ago. And it's great. We cull reviews from different, you know, notable sources, like, say, the New York Times or the San Francisco Chronicle in San Francisco, so you don't have to dig through online reviews to find a restaurant. And you can search by location, by different features, like if you're looking for brunch or late-night dining. We get different tastemakers like Mario Batali and Danielle Belude to make lists, like they're, you know, for Mario, his favorite Italian restaurants, not surprisingly. And, you know, it's just a really user-friendly way to look for restaurants. And again, not having to comb through a million different online reviews to find one.
So what do you think makes it, what's the unique piece of the DNA in the Dine app? Because there are a bunch of apps that are
sure.
that aggregate information, that have celebrity
right.
or industry lists.
I just think the user, it's really user friendly. I mean, just, it's so, you know, you go in and whatever you're looking for, it's like, you know, are you looking by location? Are you looking by cuisine? Are you looking by special features? And not only that, it's, I think one of the things that sets us apart is, you know, we have beautiful photography, beautiful, you know, it's just visually pleasing to look at as well. So like, you know, I don't know. I find it to be a very relaxing experience, you know, because like if, especially if you're out and you're searching for a place to go that night or wherever you might be, it's like you want it to be just kind of simple and not, I don't know, you know, not bogged down with too much information.
What are the plans for the app going forward? Do you have any new things that you can talk about
Actually,
that might be on the horizon?
I can a little bit. Within the next week or so, we're launching a new design. So it's going to have a bit more of, surprisingly, an Instagram feel to it in terms of scrolling on some of the features and like the photos being a bit more of a focus. So yeah, we're excited about that. That rolls out actually next week.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And so even the app.
I know.
Influenced by Instagram.
Yes, exactly.
It's amazing.
Exactly. And then obviously, like, you know, maybe some new cities. We'll see where it's going.
Okay. New cities, see where it's going. Instagram. Where does Tasting Table stand on Snapchat?
Well, we actually just launched a Snapchat a couple weeks ago. It's fun. I mean, it's very different from our other social media platforms and how we're kind of presenting the content to be kind of, you know, specific to Snapchat, but it's really playful and it's a lot of behind the scenes, like what we're making in the test kitchen, like if we're on a video shoot or something, just kind of like behind the scenes. Similar, our Instagram does that a little bit too, but this is really, you know, geared toward the younger audience with a lot of emojis and funny sayings and all that stuff. So we are on the Snapchat bandwagon.
Do you think it's going to change the demographic of the Tasting Table user? Do you hope? Is that part of the hope that you attract?
Sure.
Audience?
I mean, it's certainly geared towards a younger audience. So we're hoping that that brings more kind of younger users to tastingtable.com. You know, it's just, yeah, it's the nature of the app. So that's what we're hoping.
Do you have a younger person running that?
He's a bit younger, yes. Very fluent on the platform. I am still figuring it out a little bit, I have to be honest. But yes, it is a younger person in his 20s managing our Snapchat.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Where does your social media fall in terms of the sort of hierarchy of the editorial? Is it its own entity? Is it underneath the editorial? Is it adjacent?
We have
run on its own. Does it run with
sure.
the content?
We have a social media editor who works very closely with the editorial staff. You know, she's in all of our editorial meetings. Facebook is obviously our largest traffic driver. So we have a lot of focus on Facebook content and how it's presented and rolled out throughout the day. But no, it's very, it works very closely with editorial.
As the new social media, you know, apps and platforms are created, it's so interesting to see how it impacts traditional media. Well, you're not exactly traditional because you are digital, but
right.
you're structured, you know, in an editorial media sense.
Correct.
How you have to add another person or add a whole area. Does it change the way you look at content as an editor when you add on something like a Snapchat, just sort of out of the blue? Not out of the blue, but, you know, it's like, okay, Snapchat, we're going to get on that bandwagon, throw it onto the pile.
A little bit. I would say, again, you know, to go back to Facebook a little bit, you know, we've noticed that the sort of overhead cooking videos have performed really well for a variety of other sites. So like we've been experimenting with that, like doing a different video style. So it certainly, yes, informs some of our editorial decisions in terms of what we think is going to perform well and what our readers and social media followers are going to like. And I just think, you know, obviously as editors, we are consuming a lot of that content and it does lead to story ideas and, you know, you might see, like I said, an Instagram of a restaurant that's about to open and it might spark a story idea. I don't know that, like, say, Snapchat necessarily is changing how we're approaching editorial because we still do, you know, consider ourselves, like you said, we're digital, but it's still a fairly traditional media entity.
Well, give it time. You've only been on the Snapchat bandwagon for a couple weeks.
It's only been a couple weeks, so who knows? Maybe next month I'll have a different answer.
It's definitely digital media, social media, you know, having smartphones and tablets that have cameras and video and then all the video apps and those kinds of things change the opportunity of what kind of content you can make. And it also changes the baseline of what consumers expect to see in terms of content. Because if the average person can throw this up and it looks this good, you kind of expect your real media to do something that looks better.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
But at what point does the technology drive the content? I mean, this year, and I think it started last year, and we're still seeing it growing. Video on Facebook is the thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
You know, it started 100%. A year ago, and it's definitely trending, and I don't think we're close to the apex yet, and it'll keep going.
Right.
And everybody's doing video now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I think, you know, at Tasting Table, even we've upped our video output a lot, very significantly, basically a new video every day. So, yes, Facebook is definitely informing the way that we're presenting that type of stuff.
It's fascinating. It's a fascinating time to be in the media and be a journalist and be a content creator. Because do you feel like the types of content you create changes very rapidly? Is it a slower evolution from where you sit, or because you're sort of at the front lines, does it happen very quickly?
Well, I'll say one of the great things about Tasting Table is that we are constantly trying new things. I would say pretty quickly. You know, we don't necessarily change anything overnight, but certainly with our video strategy and how we've been shooting and presenting video, that changed fairly quickly within the last couple months. So
amazing. Well, what people don't realize is that TV shows were developed because they made a TV.
Right.
You know, I mean, we forget that back in the day when it was all radio, they developed TV shows to have something to put on the TV.
Right. Exactly.
So they could sell you the TV.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
True.
And we're in the same, we're a little bit, you know, it's definitely a chicken and the egg scenario. You'd be hard pressed to ask. Although I think in this case, technology is probably the ability to make it
right.
Is then what drives it.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting to think about, you know, if Snapchat is the thing today, what's going to be next?
Well, that's the question to ask you. What do you think is going to be next?
Oh, man.
What's on the horizon? What are the kids talking about? What are you watching?
I mean,
or is there an entity or a blogger or a writer or a thing or some crazy, you know?
Oh man, that's a great question. I mean, we're always searching for the next thing.
We were talking about Peach the last couple of weeks, and you know, people are basically saying it hasn't gotten enough audience and traction yet to be able to really see how it's gonna turn out. It's kind of a little bit of a empty room right now.
Right. Yeah, it'll be, I don't know.
Well,
I'd have to give that some thought. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Well, do you have another food tech spotlight focus on your editorial calendar in the next, for the rest of the year? Is this going to be every February? Are you going to do it again?
I think we'll do it again next year. Today is obviously the last day of February, so we still have a couple features rolling out. We actually have Jim Meehan, who's our drinks editor, wrote a piece about how technology has tamed bartending and the role of the bartender and everything. So that's going up today.
He came on to Tech Bites last year when he released... Jim Meehan is the amazing bartender, cocktail magician, who owns a little place called PDT, which is Please Don't Tell, which is in the East Village. And he did a beautiful cookbook. And he came on last year when he released his app.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke very thoughtfully about, while he was doing the book, he was already thinking about the app, because they represent two different things to him.
Right.
In terms of the book being sort of like the time capsule archive. And he described the app as being a surveillance video camera where it was like really in real time because right. things move so quickly. So it's really interesting. He's a great...
Yeah.
He has a great point of view.
For sure. And yes, this piece is also very thoughtful. It even talks about, you know, bartenders used to kind of be the Yelp or Google Maps for their customers, you know, recommending the next place to go or a restaurant
around
in
the
area. And now, you know, it's like because all of this information is so accessible, it's even changed the way that bartenders interact with their customers. So and that will be up later today on tastingtable.com.
Cocktails also impacted by Instagram and all the other trends
exactly.
and the making the drinks and everything
totally.
Like that also.
Totally. And he said, you know, like even just Google image search for bartenders to be able to see how people are garnishing or, you know, even just like watching a video as to how to make a new cocktail. I mean, there's just so much more information out there.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. So much to talk about, but we're out of time. But if you want to find out more about the best of food and tech on Tasting Table, you want to go to tastingtable.com, or you can follow them on social media at Tasting Table. If you're curious to see what Karen is up to, though, you can follow her at Karen L. Palmer, P-A-L-M-E-R. Of course, if you want to follow Tech Bytes, we're Tech Bytes HRN, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We also are TechBytesHRN at Gmail if you want to shoot us a line. Maybe you loved something. Maybe you hated something. Maybe there's something you really want us to talk about. Maybe you just launched an app in the App Store and you want to come on TechBytes. We're very interactive. Reach out. Get in touch. But before we close, I always like to ask all of my guests for a piece of advice for listeners, something that can be really actionable for them at home. So my question to you is, you know, you manage a huge buffet of media, your digital media. You must consume a ton of media.
Mm-hmm.
What's your best strategy for people to staying? How do you stay up to date but not overwhelmed? How do you consume and stay on top of it but without being on it 24/7?
I mean, I kind of am on it 24/7. So I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that.
But how do you manage it? Because it's a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, I just, you know, as an editor, you learn your kind of go-to sources and how to use the different social media platforms for different things. So, you know, when I'm at work, I'm checking Twitter all day, you know, kind of keeping abreast of the news. You know, Facebook is a little bit more just kind of social for me. It's just kind of like knowing when to pick and choose which of those tools for which parts of your life, I think, is the best way to explain how I stay sane, relatively.
Do you consume differently at work when you're in front of a desktop and then when you're away and you're on a portable device?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, again, when I'm sort of at work and focused on food news and media, it's a different, again, like the different platforms that I'm on versus, you know, if I'm on my phone, it's usually Instagram. I'm a little bit addicted, I'm not going to lie. So
that means you're in the right job.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
Well, I want to thank Karen Palmer from Tasting Table for coming out and talking about the best of food and tech. I want to thank our gentlemen in the booth, Mr. T and DJ Jack Inslee. And also thank our amazing sponsors and our members. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a .org because we're a 501c3 charity. We rely entirely on our member support and our sponsor support to keep the lights on and the radio on the air. So if you liked today's show and you want to hear more, go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart, and, you know, throw us something. What'd you spend on coffee today? Probably spent like $8 on an amazing handcrafted coffee. $8 can make some nice radio. I'm Jennifer Leutze. This is Tech Bytes. Thanks for stopping by. Come back and see us next week, Monday at 1 o'clock. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.